Listening Library presents First Boy by Gary Schmidt. Read for you by Jesse Burns. Chapter 1. Peter Hurd saw the black sedan first, dark and slow, prowling Main Street like a panther. It stopped beside the granite steps of New Lincoln Public Library as if to look for prey. Then it came on again, still slow, low to the ground. It paused by the Miracle Theater and by the New Lincoln Diner, and then right beside New Lincoln Market, right beside Peter, where it crouched and waited. Its windows were tinted so deeply that Peter couldn't see inside at all. "Jewett," Peter called back into the market. Cooper Jewett wasn't in any hurry to come outside. They had just finished freshman cross practice, and Cooper was savoring the last few swallows of his forbidden root beer. Coach would take him apart if he knew that Cooper was drinking anything but water.
"Soda will kill you. It'll send little carbonated bubbles right through your bloodstream and up into your heart. Then they'll all come together and bust."
Coach would throw his arms up in an explosion. "Soda will kill you." Just like that. But after a run on a September afternoon that could still hold an August heat, Cooper and Peter generally decided that an icy Admiral Ames root beer was worth the risk.
"Jewett," Peter called again.
Cooper took another cold swallow. The black sedan moved on. Peter watched it stalk off Main Street and down onto Whittier Road. He realized that he had been holding his breath. Cooper came out, Admiral Ames root beer still sweet on his lips. "I've got the flour and sugar," he said. "You get the milk." Peter took the milk Cooper handed to him, his eyes still watching the corner. Cooper got on his bike and hunched his loaded backpack up around his shoulders. "If old Ford was here, I could drive us home," he said.
"Could you drive a sedan?"
"I guess if it had a stick."
"Maybe you'll get your chance."
Cooper looked at him. Sometimes Hurd could say crazy things like that out of the blue.
"You think a sedan is going to stop and ask us in so we can drive home?"
"Why not?" "Because this is New Lincoln, New Hampshire, and the only strange thing around here is you."
"Witty," said Peter. "Very witty."
He hauled the milk on top of his handlebars and pushed off. Cooper pushed off too, the flour and sugar heavy in his backpack, and side by side they rode down Main Street, past Whittier, and so out of town. The last strong heat of the day laid its hand on Cooper as he pedaled, but it felt good to him. Cross practice had been a 9-mile run, 4 of them at race pace, and for all but the last 2 miles he had kept up with Peter. He felt his muscles tighten and relax, with the pedals, with no sign of little carbonated bubbles rushing toward a bust in his heart. He shifted his pack as his front wheel left the pavement at the end of Main Street and looked for a smooth run on the dirt road that led to Hurd's house. His drive waited at the bottom of a long hill, and they could coast all the way, fast enough to hear the spokes whistle and then cut in at the last second where Hurd's brothers had built up the bank. But at the bottom, Peter didn't cut in at the last second. He braked and slid his back tire out to the front, looking up at the top of the next hill ahead. Cooper braked right behind him. A black sedan crouched, its brake lights bright.
"Jewett, I saw a sedan in town."
The brake lights dimmed, and the sedan moved smoothly over the arch of the hill.
"Now you saw one out of town?" said Cooper.
Peter stared at him.
"Don't you want to know what 2 cars like that are doing in New Lincoln?"
Cooper shrugged.
"If they were Fords, maybe. If they were Ford pickups, say 1958 or 59, then I'd care." "Jewett, you should wonder if there's something wrong with you. No one else in the state wants to drive a 50-year-old pickup."
"I think of myself as unique, individual,
independent, one-of-a-kind, a free thinker, said Cooper.
There's something wrong with you, said Peter, and they biked up to the herd house.
It was a long drive to a small farmhouse, and Cooper sometimes wondered how it was that all the herds could fit inside at once. Maybe they couldn't. There was a herd in every single grade from New Lincoln Elementary to New Lincoln High, and two in eighth grade, and three in first, and one off to college. Between them all, they could almost field both sides of a baseball game, except the roster would be dang hard to keep straight. And who could call the game with all those herds?
Herd up with two outs, herd with two strikes and a ball. Herd winds up, herd on first leads, held on by herd. Herd pitches and herd swings and herd takes off for second. Herd tracks it down in center.
Mrs. Herd, surrounded by a good part of her roster, was waiting for them on the front steps. She took the flour and sugar from Cooper and handed them to a young herd, took the milk from Peter and handed it to another young herd, gave Cooper a brownie. Her hands moved as quickly as a bird's wing and gave another to Peter.
Eat them now, she said, and fluttered inside.
Cooper ate his now, but he wasn't finished before Mrs. Herd was back out and handing him a basket with a pie. An apple pie, one of Mrs. Herd's apple pies.
It has too much cinnamon in it, she said, and I'm worried that the apples might be too tart.
One of Mrs. Herd's prize-winning, blue-ribbon, best-in-the-state apple pies.
And it's probably not baked enough, but it's about milking time, so you best get on home with it.
See you, Jewett, said Peter. And Cooper watched him get swallowed up and become part of the herd nest of bustle and business. There was this black sedan in town, Cooper heard him say, and then Peter was gone inside.
Cooper swung his bike out and headed home, balancing the pie in one hand, his mouth still full of brownie. He pumped hard down the drive and up the hill, his legs burning from cross practice. But still, no little carbonated bubbles right through his bloodstream, reached the top and coasted down toward the Jewett farm. The breeze chilled him, the wind sang again in his spokes, and the farm spread out below him, the cows already heading toward the barn. The cinnamon smell of the apple pie came up out of the basket. And for a moment, it was all so right, for a moment. Then the stillness clutched him. He wished he had a dog waiting for him, a retriever named Barkus. If there was a dog, they'd go on Saturdays to show off on New Lincoln Common, and together, he and Barkus would be frisbee champions of all New Hampshire. He wished he had a brother or sister waiting, a brother to mess around with, someone to do chores with, someone on a lower bunk to talk to before he fell asleep at night. He wished he had a mother and a father, waiting with brownies when he came home from cross practice. On weekends, they would climb into a car that had a muffler and a back seat even, instead of old Ford, and drive to his meets. They would keep his times and cheer him through the sweat of the last quarter mile. He wished, he could hardly let the thought come, he wished he had a grandmother. He did have one until a year ago. She'd cook one thing he really liked each night, so he could choke down the lima beans that were good for him because there were sweet potatoes crisped with brown sugar right beside them. And he would tend her garden for her so that it would take more blue ribbons than a 4th of July parade. He still tended it, one more way to remember her, but with the apple pie and its cinnamon smell, he was coasting down only to his grandfather, who liked to say,
"There's no use wishing for what the good Lord isn't gonna send you. You just have to make do."
Cooper figured that this was so, and most days he tried to make do and not to wish. But after stopping at Herd's house, trying not to wish was like the orange sun trying not to jump up to morning, or the pastel moon trying not to glow at dusk. So he did wish all down the hill. but he knew his grandfather.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?